The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to What About Wealth? Making it, investing it, protecting it, leaving a legacy with your hosts, Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. In today's economy, preserving wealth has become more important than ever, especially when it comes to our future generations. Now, here is Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, good morning.
Rick, we're here this morning. We're going to have a guest on, Lane Schoenberger, and we'll get with him in a few minutes here. I just wanted to, there was some interesting news that I think relates directly to our program and the topics that we cover that I saw this morning when I was going through news articles and publications. So I wanted to point out to everyone is that a four-year college degree is still worth it. There have been debates that I've heard during the recession about whether or not the value of a college degree was still there. There were two recent studies completed by very reputable organizations. And what they found out was that during the recession, there were actually 200,000 jobs added if you had a four-year college degree. And then 2 million more jobs have been created since the recovery began for those with a college degree. On the other hand, for those that only had a high school degree, the jobs lost during the recession were 6 million, and unfortunately, it's still declining during the recovery. So here's kind of the statistics on the unemployment rate today. For all four-year grads, it's 4.5%, which means, I think, basically full employment, if I remember my numbers correctly, but for recent four-year grads, it's 6.8%. For high school-only grads, it's 24% and increasing. So, I guess the important takeaway from that is obvious, and that's that if you're wondering about getting a college degree, you shouldn't wonder any longer if you want to be employed. So anyway, I'm not sure what that says about everything, but it's certainly not a good sign for those that don't have a degree and really ought to be thinking about that. It seems like it's a good thing for colleges, and so just thought I would put that out there because it's an interesting thing that's happening in our economy that kind of got started with this whole recession.
You know, I remember from my college days, in law school at least, they say that the A students in law school become judges and university professors, and the B students all get jobs working for the C students. And and it's usually because the C students had a business and a job on the side and were outworking everybody else. That's why they got C's. It's curious to me, because of working with entrepreneurs and people that own businesses, a lot of times they're the maverick that maybe started college and and partway through started a business to make a living and found that their little part-time college business was doing better than the job they could get once they graduated. And so I don't disparage. In fact, I have lots of college degrees and have encouraged all my children to do the same. But it's just interesting to me that even having a college degree might get you a job if a job is what you want, but it doesn't necessarily make you the most money.
Yeah, well, no doubt about that. And you and I both work with entrepreneurs, so we're very familiar with that. And obviously, these statistics cover millions and millions, hundreds of millions of people. So there are lots of nuances in there.
So that's quite a spread, though. 7 or 8 times the unemployment for is higher for people without a college degree than with.
Yeah, so I think there's a good message there. So if you're a parent out there trying to encourage children to go to college, this might be some good information for you. Today we're going to do two things on the show. First of all, we're going to review the topic that we discussed last week, which is turning your 401k plan into a pension plan. And we have a guest on, Lane Schoenberger, as I mentioned, who was recently interviewed on Annuity News Now about that topic. And so we're going to have him discuss that for us in a couple of minutes. And then after that, we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about Section 79 plans. And Lane has spent a lot of his professional career working in that area, understands it from top to bottom. And so we're thrilled to have him on to talk with us about that today. So so to get us started here, Lane is on the line with us, and good morning, Lane.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. We appreciate you being on the show. I wanted to have you take a couple of minutes and introduce yourself and your company or companies, and then we're going to jump into reviewing this topic that you were interviewed recently about. So we're going to turn it over to you for a couple of minutes.
Wonderful. Thank you. So we actually have two firms here. My background is came into the insurance industry in 1995 into a family-owned business formerly called Campbell Schoenberger & Associates. That's now a 44-year-old planning firm started by my father, Bob Schoenberger, and his partner, Rudy Campbell, both now retired. When they retired, I purchased the firm, and over a couple of years, we started working with another group and found some really good synergies between us in the form of investment advisory services, which we did, and they did even more of. And it just seemed like a really good opportunity for us to come together. So a little over a year ago, we merged the two companies, and now we have a firm called Saros Financial, which is frankly done quite well. We're over here in Tempe on Broadway on the 101. And it's a proprietary, holistic, really incredibly human approach to retirement planning. We've created a product, if you will, called the Saros 360, which is a mentoring approach to retirement. We'll bring in a client, their family, all of the advisors, whether they're part of our team or not, and really incorporate them into a full-blown plan and practice. Then there's also another company back in the back called Strategic Insurance, which is really the clearing firm, if you will, for all of the advisors of Saros and some other firms around the valley, and now around the country, actually. So it's an opportunity for advisors to implement strategic insurance strategies, such as Section 79, life, disability, long-term care. Clients don't typically deal with or see the strategic insurance side of things. However, it is there, and it's growing and becoming quite successful. So I chose the financial services business because of a conversation that I had with my father way back in the early 90s. And I honestly, I didn't know what he did. And I said, what do you do, Dad? And he says, well, you know, I help people protect, save, and grow money. And that just seemed like a really good way to build relationships with clients and help them. And I saw people who really trusted and counted on my dad. And as I became part of the firm, what I've discovered is that there are now four generations in some cases working with our advisory team. So families have been with us for a very long time, and it's an honor to know that people trust us to take care of them and their families.
Great. Yeah, I think that's the best testimonial you can get, is if you've got people that have been with you and families have been with you for four generations. So Rick and I, of course, are both aware of that and have known know you and know the firm, and so we're thrilled to have you on today. Tell us about the interview that you did recently for Annuity News Now about this topic we discussed last week on how to turn your 401k into a pension plan. If you could just give us a brief rundown on that. We wanted to have somebody on the show besides us talking about it, so our listeners know that it's actually out there and a possibility.
Certainly. Well, in the interview, the first question that we were talking about was, you know, what is a pension plan? And really what it comes down to is a pension plan is the old idea of, I work for a company for a lot of years, maybe 30 years, and when I retire, all of my years of service are going to be turned into this income stream that I'm going to have for life. The opportunity to continue to have that income for years of service that I've dedicated to this company, they're going to guarantee me an income for my life and maybe that of my spouse. So when you look at it from a big picture standpoint, that was the draw and the excitement to the old traditional pension plan. And with the shift in the laws and the fiduciary responsibilities that have come out now from the, you know, all the current legislation, what's happening is, let's go back a few more years before that even, 401k plans became kind of the norm. Defined benefit plans became very expensive, costly. The traditional way of creating that pension plan became very expensive. So 401k plans and the like became kind of the norm. And that was, I'm going to say, even a trend. Well, as the economy turned, companies weren't making as much money, benefit plans of all sizes and shapes became scrutinized. And it's not just the 401k, but all benefit plans. And what we saw as a trend was that companies started to cut benefits, reduce benefits, eliminate benefits altogether. I watched more and more companies that had the traditional 401k plan. They didn't want to cut the benefit, cut the 401k completely, so they would stop funding from an employer standpoint where the employee could continue to fund, but the employer didn't have to. So fast forward to recent. Now we've got all this new legislation out there that's basically putting fiduciary liabilities on employers, on investment advisors, on third-party administrators that are overseeing these plans. And these companies, the ownership, they just don't want that fiduciary liability. It's easier to do away with the plan and let everybody fend for themselves than it is to be sued because they didn't offer enough investment choices or they didn't disclose fees or one thing or another. So we're seeing plans starting to fall off the books. We're seeing them shutting them down, streamlining them, doing anything they can to get that fiduciary liability removed from themselves. And then we couple that with the traditional idea that a 401k plan, the burden shifted from the employer creating that income stream for the employee for their lifetime. It shifted from the employer to the employee. And if you look at your traditional 401k today and you talk to an individual employee or a client, most people are just not putting enough away for retirement. So they're going to get out to that magical retirement date, age 65, that hypothetical age, and when it's time to retire, there's just not enough cash there. So that's become a problem as well. The onus has shifted to the people that, they ultimately are going to benefit from it, and they're just not stashing enough cash in those plans. Then, of course, as we talked about in the interview, the one more variable that adds to the complexity of all of this is the volatility of the markets. okay, a traditional 401k or a traditional retirement plan, you have to stick with your mutual funds and such, and there is no real downside protection of the market. So if you look back at 2001, you look back in 2008 when the markets just went completely haywire, retirement plans in general were just decimated. And people who were within what we refer to as that retirement red zone, you know, 5-8 years out, there's not a lot of time for recovery. So taking those kind of risks and seeing your account balance drop by 50% does not do good for retirement.
All right.
We've actually seen that a lot, and I've seen a number of my clients that have either delayed retirement or even come back out of retirement because the money they had and were counting on just isn't there.
Yep, we've seen that a lot. It's unfortunate. So what we've done is we've come up with a way to create a pension plan within your retirement. Okay, so you take your traditional retirement strategy, a 401k, and you add a component to it, which allows for an employee, and this is a choose-in, choose-out benefit. So it's not something that everybody is going to benefit from. If they don't want to use it, they don't have to. They can stick with the traditional approach. But in essence, what we can do is put an annuity inside the 401k. Now, Some people may say, well, that's not very unique. That's not very exciting. We've seen that done before. However, the difference between what we're talking about and the traditional approach is this. In the traditional approach, you might see a group variable annuity, okay, or even a group, on some cases, a group and indexed annuity. The idea behind the group annuity is you offer certain pension guarantees and so forth. You have the wrapper that goes with an annuity. However, where it tends to fall apart is when a participant leaves the plan. They don't have typically they don't have the ability to take that annuity and roll it in its entirety out of the 401k into an IRA. And if they do have that ability, what they tend to lose is the income riders, the guarantees that make that annuity so attractive to begin with. So the traditional approach is I move my investment within the 401k to a cash position, and then I roll it into my own IRA, and then when I'm in my IRA, I buy something. Well, the problem with that is the whole time the money's still in that 401k strategy, you don't have the downside protection on the market, you don't have the income guarantees. So what we've done is we've got a strategy where we can actually put an individually owned annuity into the 401k with the income guarantees. It's a single annuity. And again, I say it earlier, it's a choose in, choose out. So for example, a business owner may want to do this where an employee who's much, much younger says, I want to take some more risk in this market. I don't mind having my money in the 401k. Maybe they're just not ready to put the money into this particular annuity. The business owner says, I want to do it. Maybe some of the key employees say, I want to do it. They each can pick this particular strategy, and we take some portion, not all of, but some portion of that 401k or that retirement plan, and we put it into this annuity strategy with these income riders that are guaranteed for lifetime income. Okay, there's that pension benefit we were talking about. And then that benefit, that pension benefit, is then, it's theirs forever. Now the employee is, they leave the company, they're terminated, they quit, they move on to whatever reasons, and they are able to take that 401k that's in the IRA, in the annuity rather, and roll it into their personal IRA, and they don't have to change the investment platform. It stays exactly in that same annuity, and the value of that is that income rider that we would have lost under other scenarios stays with them. Okay? And those income riders are really strong, particularly when you're looking for a pension income for life.
Right. So is that, Lane, how does that work as far as will it also cover the employee's spouse? Is it that kind of an income rider, or is it specific just to the individual so the income is guaranteed for their life?
Good question. It's actually guaranteed for both lives, and it's a decision that can be made when one spouse passes away. The surviving spouse has the option to cash in and take the death benefit or continue the income for that spouse's life. Now, the nice part about that is that's a decision that can be made at a later date. Therefore, we don't have to worry about the pressure that puts on the client now. Plus, we can dial it in for whatever the spouse's plan is long term, because, again, we're going to want to sit down and do the math. If the death benefit makes more sense for that spouse than the income for life, then we take the death benefit and go and create another income stream for life for the spouse. But if keeping that income for life is a better advantage to the spouse, then needless to say, we want to leave that in force and provide that benefit.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. We need to go to break, but when we come back, we'll wrap that up and then move on to the Section 79 plan. So we'll do that right after this break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Are you an entrepreneur that wants to achieve more, not just in it for profit, but to do work you find meaningful that adds more value to more people in more ways? Listen for Be More, Achieve More, Inspiration for the Entrepreneurial Mind with host Chris Cooper. You'll hear from successful achievers from around the world with the passion and experience to offer invaluable guidance. These people are making a difference and will help give you the motivation and insight to achieve more. Be More, Achieve More can be heard live Fridays at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Welcome back, everyone. We wanted to point out that we are always available and accessible for a conversation. If you want to call us and talk to us live, you can call us at 480-324-8000. And our admin assistant there will set up a time so we can talk about any of these topics. As we've mentioned before, we're willing to do that with anyone. We'll spend a few minutes and talk you through a topic. And so please give us a call. we're on the phone here with Lane Schoenberger. And we wanted to wrap up this pension inside of a 401k idea that we were talking about right before break. So we're going to spend a couple of minutes on a couple more things there, Lane, and then we'll get into Section 79. So I know on the break you were telling us there was a couple of things you wanted to cover still. So let's jump into those.
Okay. So thank you. The things that I wanted to make sure were brought out in regards to putting this benefit into an existing 401k, it does not require that a plan be completely redrawn or anything like this. In fact, you don't even need to change your investment advisor on the plan. So you got someone you love, great, keep them. This is a supplemental component to your existing 401k plan, requires very little work to get it put in. A brief conversation with your third-party administrator or bookkeeper We explain the concept. We add a second platform to your 401k, and then we offer it to you and your employees on a one-on-one basis. So again, it's choose in, choose out. Does not affect your existing relationship with your advisor. So that's the first thing to bring out.
Now, I want to kind of ask a question on that. So we're not actually converting this into a pension plan. It's still a 401k. We're referring to it as a pension plan because it has some of the attributes that might be in a pension plan, but it's still, frankly, just a 401k.
Exactly. It's still a traditional retirement plan that you have in place right now. We're just adding what looks and feels like a pension benefit, which is that income for life guarantee that those traditional plans don't offer. There are a few plans that will not work on this platform. Okay, a simple will not work. A 403B will not work. Pretty much every other plan will, as long as the TPA, the third party administrator, gets on board and understands it. If the business owner wants it and the TPA doesn't get on board, well, we can assist in finding a new TPA. The idea being, we don't want to change that relationship if we can avoid doing that. Okay, but you're right, Rick. It's not a full-blown change of the plan from one to another. We're just adding an element so that the client can say, hey, I've got this pension. But that could also be something that might draw qualified employees. You know, this could be a good tool to attract qualified talent to your firm. That's one way to look at it.
And yeah, I guess another nuance here is strictly a pension plan is the defined benefit is typically a continuation of some multiple of the compensation. So if you were earning X, you're going to get at retirement X times, you know, 50% or something. And here, the guarantee is the income that pays out, and that guaranteed income is still ultimately a function of how much is contributed to the plan by the time we're done. So it is a guaranteed income. But that income is dependent on the ultimate contributions that are made over time.
Agreed. Now, there's two other components that I'll bring out really quick that might help bring this full circle. The first thing is we're using an equity indexed annuity. And the components to that are several that are very good. The first one being is we take out the market risk. Okay, we're using a particular annuity that has a 0% floor, so we know that the cash in your account will never go negative. It'll always go, if the market goes negative, it stops at zero. The other side is, on the upside, there is no cap. Okay, now most equity indexed annuities have some kind of a cap. This particular one, there is no cap. Then you tie that together with one more phenomenal, in my opinion, component, and that's very simply that the fees in the contract are waived if the contract does not actually go up in value. Okay? So if a market goes down and it stays in, you know, negative territory, client's money stops at 0%, they never go backwards, and they're not charged the fees in the contract. Now, the value of that is, and that's going back to that comment at the beginning of the show, the fiduciary responsibilities that are thrust upon these employers to make sure that their fees are in check and they're offering the right investments and so forth. Now you're offering up a component to a plan that has fees waived if the market doesn't go up, that has no downside market risk, that offers protection and a pension benefit to your employees. That's a really good position for a fiduciary to be in. That's why the TPAs tend to really like this program. From a TPA standpoint, they're a fiduciary whether they like it or not. They like it because of all of those features in and of itself. Okay. So to bring those things out, that's really important. Okay.
Those are extremely important features, and I'm glad you brought them out because I don't think we probably did a very good job of that when we talked about this in general last week. So anyway, we want to wrap up on that. It's an exciting opportunity for both employees and employers. And would encourage our listeners to get with us to discuss that, because it's a real opportunity from many areas that you've just discussed. Now, Lane, let's jump into section 79 here. So tell us just, we talk about these code sections like everybody knows what they are sometimes. So first of all, tell us, what is a section 79 plan?
Okay. Well, section 79 is an IRS code for, and really it encompasses group term insurance, which may in itself may not sound super exciting. However, there are a couple of paragraphs within the Section 79 code that reference the ability to use permanent life insurance. And there are specific ways that has to be done. It really only works for the benefit of business owners. So for the business owners that are out there, this is a plan you may want to consider looking into. But basically what it is, it's a non-qualified supplemental retirement strategy. Now, when I say non-qualified, just to differentiate between the two, qualified means such as a 401k or a defined benefit or something along those lines, and qualified also means that you have to have similar and equal benefits for all employees, okay? Non-qualified is not... The IRS has looked at it, and they're watching it, but it does not mean that you have to provide the exact same benefit to every single employee like you would in a traditional retirement plan. So in a Section 79 plan, the minimum benefit that is typically offered is a $50,000 group term life insurance policy, very inexpensive benefit, and there are certain rules that apply to groups of more than 10 or less than 10. And you offer this group term life insurance to the defined group, if you will, and then the employer, typically the business owner, maybe some key employees, would jump into the idea that, hey, I want to add more money to my retirement strategy, and how do I do that to create an income stream in my retirement? And keep in mind, this is life insurance, so one of the components that we definitely want to make sure we address is, from a life insurance perspective, do you need more life insurance? What are the value of life insurance in your estate plan, in your portfolio? And it's always good to have a nice balance, okay? I would never tell an employer to do away with a qualified retirement plan in lieu of a Section 79 plan. However, a nice supplement to your retirement plan, your traditional retirement plan approach. But a Section 79 plan then allows in this example, the business owner to put away money for their retirement, long-term planning objectives, with no real cap on the amount that they put away. The real cap is tied to their budget. What can they realistically afford? Okay. We're using an equity-indexed life insurance policy. And I went back to the equity-indexed concept here, but same idea, 0% floor, no cap on the upside, tied to a market indices such as the S&P 500. So we've got downside protection in the market, but there is that insurance component. You got to have that death benefit in there. Life insurance is kind of a unique vessel in that, particularly in Arizona, it's creditor protected, 100% on the cash value. It's liquid, and I'll go into that a little bit further. Lost my train of thought. It's creditor protected, it's liquid, it's tax deferred growth. So all that money that's growing inside the plan is tax deferred, just like in a traditional retirement plan. But one of the real keys behind it is when you pull that income stream out at retirement, it's tax free because it's life insurance and you're taking loans and withdrawals from your life insurance policy. So it's a way to reduce the tax consequences in the future, of which we don't know what they're going to be. Okay, one of the reasons I say let's supplement this with a 401k and balance the two plans, if that makes sense.
So instead of having term insurance, we can have a cash-based insurance policy.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And some of the policies can be term, so the business owner can use term policies for the employees, but for the business owner themselves, they can use this equity indexed cash based policy.
Agreed. Yes.
And is there a limit on the death benefit? Can they have a gajillion dollars, or is it the same $50,000 limit?
No, there are limits, but the term insurance is going to be a minimum of $50,000, and then the death benefit on the permanent insurance is really almost a derivative of the cash that they're putting in. So I'll give you an example. If a male age 45 wants to put in $100,000, for example, per year, could they do that? Well, the amount of death benefit that might purchase would be, let's say, $2.5 million of life insurance. Okay? So $100,000 is buying $2.5 million of death benefit. Now remember, we're not doing this because, in this example, we want the death benefit. That's a wonderful byproduct of the plan, and we're going to tie that into the client's estate plan from a life insurance component and perspective. However, remember, when we started talking to this client, the intention was, I want to create this huge income stream potential when I retire. So Section 79, this is a five-year plan, so we fund it for 5 years. So using my example, the client puts $100,000 in for 5 years. That's $500,000 over that full length of time. The money that goes in, going back to our business side, this is something that works really in a C corporation only. Okay, now if you've got an entity that is not a C corporation, don't let that be the hanging factor on whether you do or do not consider this plan. That would be something we'd want to sit down and kind of talk through and see if there's a reason or a way to make it work within an organizational structure, and that's something that Rick and Rich can certainly get involved in, and how to structure businesses for the benefit of an estate plan and so forth.
Yeah, we can help them figure out how to add a C corp to their structure. That's
absolutely
a small hurdle.
Right. So $500,000 goes in. The company actually writes the check for the plan, and because it's a C corporation and the company's writing the check, this becomes a business expense. Company writes it off 100%.
So who owns the policy?
The corporation? Policy's owned by the individual. Cannot be owned by the corporation, and the beneficiary cannot be the corporation. Okay? So the plan is then in place. The corporation writes off $100,000, but someone has to pay some tax. So using my example, the employee would get a W-2, hypothetically in this example, for, say, $65,000, $66,000. Now, in a 40% tax bracket, the tax on $66,000 is about $24,000, okay? So there is some tax due by, in this case, the employee. However, if they were going to pay their full income tax on that money and then put it away post-tax, it is more detrimental to them. So money goes in. It's in the life insurance policy, 0% floor, upside potential, got a death benefit intact. We fund it for a full 5 years. Now the employee is ready to retire, let's say at age 65. Okay, if we look at the S&P 500 and we factor out all the negative returns, let's use an average return of, say, 7% after all expenses, which is actually, if you factor out all the negatives, a pretty realistic return. Your income stream that we're generating, hypothetically, on average for this client, is just under $100,000 a year tax-free for a 20-year period. About $1.9 million of tax-free income that's coming out of this life insurance policy. And all the while, the death benefit is still intact. Now, we've gone in and intentionally reduced it. I'll talk about that, too. But this income, tax-free income, is there to support the supplemental income, or to supplement income, rather, for the employee to their 401k. Now, just to put it into perspective, if an employee has a 401k or an IRA and they wanted to draw out $100,000 a year tax-free, it's actually $99,000 and change, they would have to take out about $165,000 a year, pay the tax at 40% tax bracket, to net $99,000 a year. So they're taking out $165,000 a year and paying the taxes to net the same amount that they put into the 79 plan. They'd have to pull out over $3 million in that same 20-year period, pay the tax to net $1.9 million that they're getting out tax-free from the Section 79 plan. Does that make sense in the math?
Yeah, it does. I have a number of follow-up questions we want to ask, but we need to take a break right now. So let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll explore some of these questions about the Section 79 plans.
Sure.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. We're hearing more and more about the cloud and how we're using the cloud in our daily lives, whether we're aware of it or not. How can the cloud help your business? Join Bonnie D. Graham every Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time for In the Cloud with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel, and learn how to make your business soar to new heights.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to What About Wealth with Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to info@whataboutwealth.com. That's info@whataboutwealth.com. Now back to Rick and Rich.
Okay,
Welcome back.
Lane, we want to talk about who the ideal candidate for a Section 79 plan is, but I have a kind of a preliminary question. I know with life insurance policies, there's the mortality cost. There's some internal costs associated with the insurance benefit, which is understandable. But here's my question. I don't want it to be too obscure or esoteric, but is it possible to reduce the death benefit, keep the death benefit low on that policy so that the policy is more efficient for purposes of growing its cash value?
Absolutely. In fact, by design, that's exactly what we want to do, is we want to make sure that we keep the death benefit as low as possible, because the intention behind this particular concept is income driven. The cost and the policy can actually affect your cash value. So we do drive it down as low as we can. Then and this gets a little bit complicated. However, I'll go into it briefly. At under IRS code, life insurance, you have to be very careful that we don't, in essence, blow up a policy. That's called creating a modified endowment contract. What we don't want to do is have too much cash going into a policy that has too little death benefit. However, the rules in essence state that at about policy year 7, really it's at the end of policy year 7, we can modify the policy within certain parameters. So using my prior example, the death benefit drops from about $2.5 million down to, say, $600,000. And that's by design, because at that point, that's the first chance that we can actually reduce that death benefit, thus reducing the internal costs in that policy, making it as efficient as possible. What I like about this, guys, is the flexibility that it offers the client. And I tell them this in our meeting. I say, this is not a decision you have to make today. This is a decision that we're going to have 7 years from now. And when we have that conversation, it's going to sound a little like this. How are you feeling?
You're feeling lucky.
Exactly. So here's the reason behind it. 7 years ago when we started this plan, it was an income-driven plan. 7 years later, if you're a type 2 diabetic bungee jumping smoking scuba diver, the last thing we want to do potentially is reduce your death benefit. Okay? Keeping that life insurance in force may become really important to your spouse. We make that decision 7 years from now. It's not a decision you have to make today.
So let me just make sure I understand. We keep the death benefit high during the contribution years so we can maximize the amount of cash we put in, but when we're no longer contributing, we reduce the death benefit potentially to reduce the internal costs of the policy.
Exactly.
Okay, so now, and I appreciate that. Talk to us about who the heck does this work for? Who's the ideal person to do this Section 79 plan?
The ideal candidate would be a business owner that, well, needless to say, they're making money. They have to be able to commit to a premium, to a contribution for at least 5 years. And when we sit down with a client and we're talking about this as a possibility, and I use that $100,000 contribution example, you know, what I've seen in the past, my experience shows that people tend to get excited, oh, I can do $100,000. And that, you have to remember, that's a 5-year plan. It's a 5-year commitment. There's some variance in that. So if you had to, you know, modify it for one emergency or another, yes, you could. However, we want to try and dial it in as tight as we can so it's comfortable. So I tend to scale back a lot of the people we talk to. When they get excited about $100,000, chances are 50 is really a much more realistic number. But using that example to answer your question, Rick, the best candidate is typically a business owner that has a desire to put more money away for retirement, that has a need for life insurance. There are tax advantages that come with this. However, I would never sell it based on the tax advantages alone. That's not why you do it. You do it for the income and the death benefit and how you can tie that into your estate plan and so forth. And those are the people we focus on. Whether you have a C corporation or not, for the practical purposes of a conversation, doesn't matter. The reality of it is, like you said earlier, if this is a solid plan that works best, there's a way to make that work. We just have to be a little bit creative, frankly.
Now, can you do this with, and I know there's no sell for the insurance guy on this kind of question, but can a business owner do this with an existing life insurance policy?
No. No, the existing life insurance policy will not work. It has to be tied into the Section 79 plan from inception. So, no, you cannot.
So with that policy that's out there, a Section 79 policy, can they use that policy for other things? Can they contribute dollars outside the Section 79 plan to that policy?
After the 5-year funding period, yes. During the 5-year funding period, you really do want to keep it funded by the plan, by the company. And you know, we talk about it, Rick, from the standpoint that this is an income strategy. And you ask me who the best candidates are. The youngest business owner, the younger the business owner, the better. Okay, now that, I don't want to discourage a business owner who's 60, 65 years old from having the conversation. Needless to say, like any investment, if you put money into something and it only has a year or two to really season before you start taking it out, you're not going to get as much value from an income perspective. So the younger you are, the better. It has more time to kind of season and take some opportunity for growth. However, if you're an older business owner, while you may not get as much value out of it from an income perspective, perhaps maybe your business has been successful enough, maybe you've got enough financial resources that you have an estate planning need, and we tie this into your estate plan as opposed to an income strategy. Okay, because it's about the death benefit at that point. It's not about the income. Why not tie this plan together and use that to pay for your life insurance to cover your estate taxes? That can be done as well.
In the estate plan scenario, the policy can't be owned by the corporation. I assume it can be owned by a trust or even an irrevocable trust that is part of the estate plan?
Correct. Absolutely.
And are there gifting consequences if you're buying this large life insurance policy with a death benefit owned by a trust for the children, for example? Does it constitute a gift to the children when the corporation pays the premiums on these policies?
Well, that's a good question, and I would actually want to refer back to, you know, the CPA to get clarity on how they would want to transact that particular item. However, the reality of it is just in the Section 79 plan, there is no gift issue. Now what we've got is a policy that's owned by a trust that, you know, let's call it the irrevocable trust. It could potentially create some gifting issues from the standpoint of taxes. However, the funds that are typically going in are usually within exclusion amounts.
Okay, so they're going to be under annual gift exclusions.
Correct.
That's something that's got to be factored in as we're looking at the overall plan.
Agreed. And we would look at that on a case-by-case basis. However, I have not had a problem with that yet. Of course, rules can change, as we've all seen.
That's for sure. Well, Lane, tell us about any major concerns that someone should have regarding a Section 79 plan. There's certainly plenty of concerns expressed, you know, as I kind of research this topic. So, you know, what's legitimate? What should people be worried about? That kind of thing.
Well, the first thing is always work with an advisor who knows and understands what a Section 79 is and how to implement a plan correctly. You know, you obviously don't want to overdo a plan. Like I was talking about earlier, if a client is excited about putting $100,000 a year in and getting to know my client, I discovered that might be a little much. My job is to help scale that back and make it realistic. I want them to love the plan. And if they're struggling to fund it, they're not going to love that plan, nor are they going to love me. If you do a search online, you're going to find both positive and negative information, as you would with any concept, idea, or product. Just to clarify, Section 79 is not a listed transaction. If you go to the IRS website and look up listed transactions, you will not find Section 79. Section 79 is a very viable tool when implemented correctly, and I can say that about any strategy, frankly. You know, when abused, it's going to be scrutinized. The fact of the matter is, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, for example, if you're establishing this plan simply for the tax benefits, well, you're going to be scrutinized probably, and you could have a problem with the IRS. A good advisor is going to make sure you understand this is not why you're implementing a plan, and frankly, if someone ever told me they were doing that, I'd walk away. You don't want to implement it for the wrong reasons. You know, you've got to do it for the right thing. The scare tactics that are out there about this plan they exist with any kind of plan. And, you know, you just got to look into the resources and the people that are talking about them both positively and negatively and make sure you're working with someone who is going to give you both sides of the story. And stick with the facts. And that's why I say it's not a listed transaction. So if anybody that tells you it's a listed transaction, go look it up for yourself. You'll see it's on the website, IRS website. It's not a listed transaction. But like any good strategy, the IRS is going to watch it and monitor it for abuse. And so we want to make sure that there is no abuse, because if there is, it's going to be yet another benefit that they finally close down and then nobody gets to use it.
So rather than focusing on what would be abuse, talk to us just briefly, what is not abuse? How do we structure it so that it's not abusive?
Well, good question, and I go back to the idea that we need to really assess the business owner's needs, make sure that we're implementing it for the right reasons. For example, we're trying to create that income stream during retirement, that the business owner or whoever we're implementing it for truly does have a need for life insurance. You know, and this is being correctly coordinated with their estate and business plan. Those are the right ways to do it. Okay, the wrong ways are to approach it from the tax benefits. It's that simple.
Now, this might be, an esoteric question, but if we have a situation where the business owner has health issues and is not insurable for some reason, can the benefit be based on insuring the life of another person, a spouse or a child? Or is that even possible, or are we now into the abusive category?
Well, it depends. If the child or the spouse is an employee of the firm, then yes, we could. And of course, they have to have income, and you can't put a spouse into the plan and put $100,000 into their plan when they're having a salary of $50,000 a year. I mean, that doesn't make sense. So that would be abuse. They have to be having a salary that's commensurate with their position and be an employee of the firm, et cetera. But there are ways around that. Now, going back to the idea of an employee that's maybe a business owner that's not insurable, depending on the number of employees in the organization, remember I said earlier there's sets of rules for groups of less than 10, and there's rules for groups of more than 10. Groups of more than 10 require full underwriting, blood, medical questions, the whole workup. Groups of less than 10, there is only a medical questionnaire. There's no blood or medical test or anything along those lines. It's just the medical questionnaire. Now, if an employee is able to qualify on a substandard table B or better, then they could still become an insured candidate within this program, even though they may not have qualified under full underwriting, or maybe have gotten worse underwriting. So there is a way to get an employee in to a plan sometimes, as long as they're not completely and totally uninsurable. We have some room for movement there.
Okay. So if you're a small company, small business owner, less than 10 employees, the underwriting is easier. So
it's different than your traditional underwriting. Let's put it that way. I think
okay.
It's necessarily easier. It's just it's different. Doesn't require the front test and so forth.
So okay. Let me ask you this about the windfall. A small business owner, you know, they've been clicking along, making a modest living, but they're going to have a windfall. One year they're going to have a disproportionate income than they have historically had, and they may not have it again. Does it work with that scenario? Because we get that kind of question. Oh, I'm going to have a windfall this year. It's never happened before, and it's probably not going to happen again, but I got a big chunk of money this year. Can we use a Section 79 plan? I guess we're coming back to the tax issue. Have we been abusive, or is there a planning opportunity there?
Oh, I certainly see a planning opportunity, keeping in mind that the intention behind the plan was a five-year funding. So we want to structure the plan correctly, because if you do have one-year funding, you can really devastate the plan, and they need the tax benefit this year. So we have to structure it in such a way that it works right, but there's definitely a planning opportunity. And by just because they're going to have a windfall, that doesn't make it an automatic red flag. You know, we're installing a plan that's going to accomplish several things that we now finally have the capacity to fund and do correctly. We just want to make sure that it's scalable, okay? If we dump 100% of that money into the plan, that could be looked at negatively for sure. But yes, there's definitely an opportunity there.
All right, Rick, we're about out of time, so why don't you go to calls to action here, and then we'll sign off.
Well, Lane, I want to thank you a great deal for being on our show. This is very helpful. Sometimes if we get together and talk about something, I'm good at asking questions, but if it's a topic I don't know about, I'm just going to be sharing ignorance. So I'm grateful to have somebody who's actually good at some of these things to ask the tough questions for. We want to invite our listeners to evaluate their business structures, to explore whether adding a Section 79 benefit plan would be appropriate, and evaluate their current benefits. And I guess to our listeners out there that either have a small business or advise a small business to take a look at that and see if it would be appropriate. And of course, we invite you to contact Rich or myself through email at info@whataboutwealth.com or at our general business number 480-324-8000. We would love to hear from you. We enjoy it when our listeners call. It makes life exciting and fun to have some of that happen. So we'd love to hear from you, and hope to see you again next week when we're back with another exciting topic.
Thank you for listening to What About Wealth with hosts Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee. Please join us again for another edition next Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Until then, have a profitable week.